Here is That Which Is with John Roger. That Which Is presented by MSIA, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, a movement dedicated to awakening the spiritual heart within each of us. John Roger is the founder and spiritual advisor of MSIA, the founder and president of the Institute for Individual and World Peace, founder of the Heartfelt Foundation, and other organizations dedicated to improving people's lives. John Roger is a best-selling author, and he has been teaching and conducting seminars for many years. Right after John Roger speaks, we'll tell you how you can obtain more information about MSIA.
We don't discuss things in terms of religion, nor in terms of church or churchianity. We do this more in a scientific framework or an educational framework. And a long time, a gentleman by the name of Voltaire said something like this. It would depend on who the translator is. If you show people the light, they'll find their own way. In one sense of the word, that was a half-truth. Because it seems like intellectually we've been shown the light a lot of ways, and we still haven't found the way. And that way is what we refer to as the loving consciousness. If you were going to describe that scientifically, you would say it is that substance that holds all things together in the respective positions that they are now in. Or we simply call it that which is. One other scientist described it, the substance that holds the universe together is that which is. And I figured that he was on top of it, but didn't want to call it love, didn't want to call it a religious term, and so stayed within the scientific format. I go back and forth through all of this, and it gets real disturbing to a lot of people. They'll say, well, why can't he just be a scientist or an educator or a preacher or something? Why does he keep going across all these fields? And there's a really simple answer. It's because I can. And some people can't, and it disturbs them. So they want me to speak to them as an individual in a large group of people. And to say what they've come in for me to tell them, and they already know what that is, so they'll know when I say it to them, they'll recognize it. But then the other thought of that is, why are you here if you already know it? Why are you not out there in the world doing something with it? About 20 years ago, about 1955 to 57, a beautiful lady that I was really enamored with. It was much more detailed than that word describes it. Told me about some people who had some extrasensory perceptive abilities. And I was into psychology up to my eyebrows. And of course, that just can't be. It had to be emotional hysteria or something else connected with that. So I said, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down and test them. And she said, well, I didn't tell you that information for you to go test anybody. I told you that in hopes that you could go down and learn something. And I looked at her real perplexed. But I went to the meeting anyway, because after all, I had the information. She couldn't keep me away. She could ask me and I'd have stayed away. And I listened to a man speak. And I heard many people in the room talk to him in terms of great seriousness and the profoundness of life and radical assumptions of truth. And really wanting to get on with their life in a real deep, meaningful way and progress and make something out of it. And I was back there with my psychological textbooks. I was going to test the guy. She was sitting next to me. watching me with my little notepad, because I'd already caught him in 20 or 30 contradictions, not knowing that that's the way truth works. It stirs you around and stirs you around till you forget the mind, and then you become aware insightfully of what's happening. Well, I was too smart to know all that. I was really intellectual. The whole thing that boiled down to is, why are you going to waste his time and other people's time by testing? Why don't you just go do something else and leave those people who are really wanting to know and to learn the freedom and the space to learn, instead of you setting yourself up as the village wit, as a half-wit, to see if somebody's right or wrong? I've never been assigned that position by anybody. But feeling self-authoritative and full of ego gratification, I just decided that, you know, I would be the savior of the world, not realizing that the world didn't need to be saved. That's all over. Now the idea is to live at a more high spiritual level in all that form. And over the years, it became more and more clear to me that the more I read in the books, the less there was there for me to really experience. But there were a whole lot of theoretical constructs for me to deal in case I ever came up against the real thing that the theory described. I haven't. I'm not too sure that very many people have. The scientific methodology I still adhere to, and not the one that you've been taught as somebody who is a sociologist or psychologist, wherein you can repeat the experiment over and over with predictable results with a standard deviation from a certain mean structure. That wasn't my particular approach to it, even though I knew that. I knew that statistics didn't lie, but I knew that liars could use statistics. And I found out how they did that. You go in and you do the scientific approach the way that we shouldn't do it. It's called, here's what I'm looking for, and here's what I'm going to find, and I will manipulate my results to find that. Now, we've seen that and heard that in the recent years in publications where people have done research and then falsified the reports, made them sound good. Other people got the results, went and tried to redo the same thing and said it didn't come out that way, and redid it, and it didn't come out that way. The true science, the true scientific approach is this. I'm going to go down the street, around the corner, and then I'll see what's there, and then I'll tell you what I find. That is different than telling you what I'm going to find, and then go down the street and search until I find it. In this field of consciousness, the whole process of lifting of consciousness is to take away the presumptive point of view or the assumption point of view, because of one simple thing. If you knew it, you wouldn't have to assume it. And if you have to assume it, you don't know it, so how are you going to know that's what it is when you find it? It's a catch-22, your dead end. Since that's the way it works scientifically, people give up on it, and they talk about all the people who study in this field, generally called metaphysics. They refer to them as the metaphysals, because the things they predict fizzle out. They don't show up. They don't know that there is no real science on the planet except spiritual. All the other things are an art in some form of quasi-manifestation in an ordered form that seems to be repeatable. There used to be a saying 20 years ago, what comes up must come down. That was irrefutable. Well, we got stuff up there that's never going to come down. It's on the moon. It's going across Jupiter. It's way out there. That one no longer applies, but years ago, that was a standard as eat all the peas on your plate so the kids in China won't starve. Maybe yours down here was eat all the carrots or something. But we've all had those absolutes placed on us. And we found out as we grew older Those are not absolutes. As long as we dwell anywhere in our mind, in our emotion, in our body, we cannot deal in an absolute, because it is a process of change. And it's not an absolute change. Then the play Fiddler on the Roof, there's a section where a statement is made, when did I grow old? I don't remember growing older. When did that happen? There's not an absolute change. There's a gradual processing. One day we look in the mirror, and we say, yeah, you're older. Gray hairs, but you can have gray hairs when you're young. Steve Martin showed us that. You can have wrinkles. That could just be from expressing yourself a lot or squinting in the sun. But someplace you do look at the texture of your beingness in the physical body. You say, I don't remember the stomach getting bigger. I don't remember spreading out. I don't remember. But one day you sit down, your pants rip from stern to stern. Or you can't put on that dress or whatever it is. And you go, oh, I've got to change something. Well, whatever it is you were doing up to that point produced exactly what you got. So I wouldn't change something. I would go about changing a whole bunch of things. Let me give you an example, because a lot of people think, I'll just take this in the 22 approach, you know, one single shot and that's it. And it's better to take the shotgun approach, where it splatters out and you're going to hit a lot of things all at one time. Just out of curiosity, how many of you in here, and let's do this by raise of hand, smoke? Okay, now keep your hand up if you also drink coffee. And keep your hand up if you also have a drink once in a while. Now, fine. The interesting thing is, cigarettes are addicted to coffee. Coffee is addicted to body energy. If you're going to stop smoking cigarettes, you got to stop the coffee. Because how can you have your coffee without your cigarette? And how can you have your martini without your cigarette? So if you're going to stop drinking, you have to stop the smoking, because as soon as you pick up a cigarette, you go for the drink, or you go for the coffee. These things tie in together. Some people, certain colors, they'll see certain colors, like somebody wearing a brown suit, and they got to go have a piece of chocolate cake. Well, that may seem strange to you, but wait till you see the cake they have. They have addictive patterns that are patterning their life, and they feel incapable, incompetent, have an inability feeling to handle with what's going on. But the fundamental truth of it is that they are not radically looking at their life from a radical point of view called this. You are the one that are producing the results in your life by the patterns and the approaches that you do daily, every day. And we have the ability to recreate ourselves new and fresh every day, because man is the only recreative principle on the planet. We are the only recreative principle. Everything else is evolutionary or comes by way of seeds or is annually, and you got to replant it. But man can sit and continually recreates. What that statement says as a scientific premise is this. If you're carrying over any type of behavior you don't like from yesterday to today, you have forgotten the process of recreation to bring yourself into newness. You're carrying over something that remembers itself from yesterday and ties itself into today, and you find yourself producing similar things today as you've done for the last umpteen years, and this day is the day called boredom. I lead a very boring life. People come to me and say, oh, John Roger, I'm so bored. Why am I bored? I say, you do boring things. it is humorous, but after you think about it for a little bit, people come up and they say, I'm depressed. Why am I depressed? I say, you don't support yourself in all the situations and you allow your energy to drop. And they look at me and they say, well, I thought you were going to tell me it's because my husband's stepping out on me. Or I said, no, that's your excuse. Your husband can step out on you and you still support yourself. You can still keep your energy up. Oh, yeah? I thought I had a right to be depressed. Oh, you do. Sure, and you got the best excuse in the world. But will getting depressed make him stop doing that? No, he doesn't want to be around me because he says I'm depressing. And that depresses you? Yeah, it makes me feel even worse. So then you really get to be depressed because after all, he's made you depressed by what he's doing. Yeah. Well, that's reasonable, but it's crazy. Well, what should I do? I mean, it's reasonable, but it's crazy. But I'm depressed, and I'm going down, and oh, golly gee, and I came to you for help, and all I get are trite comments and phrases. I say, not trite, try it, comments and phrases. I say, what? Try being happy. Try it. Be happy. Well, but my husband's not here. I know. That's a good reason to be happy. Get another one. Make him worry about you instead of you worrying about him. Make your place where you are the only place in the world that has anything worthwhile for him. You've made the place where you are the place that he doesn't want to be. Well, I've tried everything. That's a generalization. You haven't tried everything. Well, what do you mean it's a generalization? Well, you said you've tried everything. Have you tried being more loving? Well, no. Well, that's one of them. But sometimes. Well, what are you holding back? What are you not telling me? Well, sometimes I don't feel like loving him because I know that he's stepping out on me. So you let your feelings run you. Yeah, don't you let yours run you? No. You don't? Doesn't everybody let their feelings run them? No. Some people just are intellectual orbs floating around on a little thing here. It looks like the neck blew a bubble. And there's nothing from the chin down. Everything you say to them, they take apart intellectually. You say, do you love me? They say, yeah, I love you. I didn't feel like it. Oh, well, I love you anyway. I mean, but you're not too romantic. We intellectual people aren't romantic. Would you like me to read you something from a book? No, give me the book. I'll take it home and read it myself. Then I will put the romantic things in that I want. And you can go down to the library and sit with all your intellectual information and have yourself a good evening. I'm going to find somebody else who would like to be with me in front of the fireplace, and we can be with each other, and we can discuss anything and everything. But I want to be with somebody who's going to be there with me that I can have an essential contact with. Called, I want to look in your eyes and have you look back at me and know that we're together somehow. Hey, that's called romance. I know it's mushy. But we're the only creature on the planet that can do that. Have you ever seen two dogs look each other in the eye and be mushy? Your dog will look you in the eye and be mushy. Oh, yeah, they'll climb right up in your lap and just lick you silly. I wouldn't do that if I were you because they're looking at a lot of things and you might not want that on your face. I mean, that's just a word to the wise. There is such a thing called personal hygiene in any relationship. And sometimes people won't tell the other person, you know, it's not that I don't like you, it's just a matter of personal hygiene. Just stand downwind from me. And the person really feels hurt and upset that they told them that. It's like, well, when you talk to me like this with your hand over your mouth. That'll make a real essential communication. Or you could say, here's a certs. It can be a breath mint or a candy mint, depending upon how you want to take it. But just in case it's my own breath blowing back in my face, I'll take a cert too. Now you've handled both cases at once without insulting or being the protagonist or the antagonist. What you are doing is you're saying, if the fault lies within you, this is for you. If the fault lies within me, this is for me. And in case both of us together are creating bad chemistry, this will hopefully handle that. And if it gets worse than what search can handle, we shouldn't really be together. Because our bodies are disturbing each other on electrical, chemical levels. And if it's going to disturb it now, what's it going to be like later? Now, historically, if you're in a whole other genre of life, some people really go for the natural odors of human beingness. Napoleon, when he was coming home, sent a letter to, I think her name was Desiree. He said, Josephine, but that was another one. I think Desiree is this one. I'll be home in 2 weeks. Do not bathe. He wanted the natural essence of who she was. Well, I wasn't too sure she was bathing anyway prior to that. But the thing of it is, our culture culturates us in such a way that we attempt to behave according to standards and norms. So we can be observed sociologically, psychologically, and fit within parameters of behavior in society. That is not a spiritual approach. That's called the sheep approach. Herd them together, fence them in, and sheep are primarily one of the dumbest creatures around. So if you're being a sheep in terms of that approach, then you have to stand up inside of you to take a look at your life to see, are you following just the herding instinct, the gathering together instinct, the keeping up with the Jones or Smiths or Browns instinct? Now you say, are those instincts? Oh, sure, you can call them anything you want to. What they are self-motivating behavioral mechanisms that we have created someplace down the line and keep bringing them forward every day. When we keep bringing them forward enough, over and over, it becomes a rut. Prior to that, it becomes a method. Then it becomes methodical. Then it becomes a rut. Then it becomes a grave. We have to sacrifice contraction. Every time we feel unloving, alienated, and separated, we have to sacrifice that feeling by doing nothing with it. Except just sitting there with it and breathing in and breathing out. And the very nature of the spirit inside of us starts the flow opening automatically, and you do not have to deal with the food, the cigarettes, the alcohol, the addictions, the husband, the wife, the depression. Those things fall away as being absolutely and totally unnecessary in your life. They drop away. An example. Back in high school, that old gang of mine, boy, we're all going to live together and die together. Yeah, well, where are they today? I don't know. I haven't seen them in years. Everybody just sort of went their separate ways. I mean, nobody really said goodbye. It's just they were no longer part of what I was doing. And we're all still great friends, and I just never think about them. That's how these other things work too. They're just old friends that leave and go. Then we get to live in a pure statement of who we are. That pure statement is just one of the conductor of divine energy. We are the only ones that can conduct divine energy. We are the only ones that can conduct divine energy. That's it. The others have divine energy in them, to the level that they can contain it. We can contain it and conduct it and give it to other people in the statements of sharing, supporting, uplifting, loving, raising a family, caring, and sacrificing that that is not part of our total beingness to uplift that that we've agreed to. Anything that gets in the way between you, your wife, your children, must be sacrificed. As a statement of that will make you contract and force separation between you and your wife and you and your children if you don't sacrifice it. Called what? I want to be free. Free in the statement of agreement. People say, I want to be free, and they think that's a license to run over everybody. To be free brings about the principle of recreation on a higher level for everybody. To give and bring freedom to everybody, not by statement, not by teaching, but by the mere action of your beingness in the free state. But you must go through that suffering of sacrificing. It is a positive thing. I don't know. Some people can't give up cigarettes. They really suffer. They can't give up coffee. They really suffer. They can't give up this. They really suffer. But when they give it up and walk away, there's no more suffering. There's only the freedom present of who they are as a divine person. That's us, walking around disguised as stupids, as idiots, as all sorts of things. And yet we are the divine conductor. To conduct the divine, we must be in contact with that. To be in contact with that, we must meditate on that. To meditate on that, we must go in where that is. To go where that is, we must close our eyes so the world does not distract us and let the mind run out its energy and emotions fall. And then what spontaneously rises is the joy of our own spirit. And the soul manifests itself right there. And that's you, Berush Beishan.
John Rogers' closing words were Berush Beishan, which means the blessings already are. The blessings, the ideas, and the concepts which you've heard are just a small part of the abundance of material John Roger has shared with us over the years. If you would like a free book by John Roger, Journey of a Soul, call this number, 1-800-899-2665. You can send email to servicedesk@msia.org or write to That Which Is, Post Office Box 513-935, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90051-1935. This has been That Which Is with John Roger. Thanks for joining us.